Hi, this is Alexander Rossi, 2008 Formula BMW America's and World Final Champion, and you're listening to F1Weekly.com.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Steven, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1 Weekly. This is Steve Faub, and I'll be your host for the show today. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, doing Motorsports Mondial, and picking up co-hosting duties. The host, Mr. Clark Rogers, is on holiday. This is podcast number 362, July 16th, 2009. And this podcast is brought to you by the Jim Russell Rotax Challenge and Marin Karting. Check them out, you know you want to. On today's show, is Bernie lucky? Ferrari ready to move their effort towards 2010. PK might not be in Hungary. Button plans to kick some booty. And the FIA boss rumors. Well, welcome to the studio, Nasser. How are you today?
Very good, sir. Thank you. Thank you for the delicious mint tea.
My pleasure, Nasser. The commissary is always open for you. You get to sit in the big chair today with Mr. Rogers off in France.
How are things for you, sir?
Going pretty good. A little bit warm here in the South Bay this week, so I'm getting baked while I work in my garage, but outside of that, it's been a good week. Well, the first story I want to cover tonight, or today, is basically CBC finally speaking out to the press about Bernie's comments of almost 2 weeks ago regarding the leadership skills of some dictators from the past, and the fact that the CBC partners were not really happy, big surprise, with this, considering that several of the board members are major players in the Jewish community. It was interesting. Donald McKenzie, the man with whom Bernie actually conducted the sale of F1, has already confirmed that there's no question that they are considering giving Bernie the asking Bernie to step down and or possibly trying to move him into an honorary title instead of an actual working title. But a lot of people believe that that move was tempered by the whole FIA FOTA thing and the possibility that if they cut Bernie loose, Bernie would just jump over and help FOTA put F1 back together again. Another interesting thing I saw in one article was the fact that Bernie had run out and trademarked GP1, Formula Grand Prix or Grand Prix Formula or something like that, and a couple other trademarks mm-hmm. that could be, you know, kind of used to create a new Formula One. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Your thoughts, or is this just more of finally? I'm actually glad the CBC finally stepped up and made a comment, but it took them way too long.
Yeah, you know, here's the guy who says what he wants to say. And, you know, some months ago he had made a comment when they were asking him about females or this and that kind of people to raise the awareness of Formula One. And he said, yeah, the ideal racing driver would be a woman who is Jewish. So Bernie talks, you know, and sometimes people just take him too seriously. But, of course, in this day and age of political correctness, you have to be careful what you say.
You've got to be really careful, especially when you're in a executive position such as Bernie's where, you know, you're really you're supposed to be looked up to.
Yeah, and I thought they were going to get this thing resolved by Wednesday.
I heard that the whole FOTA FIA renewed controversy was supposed to have been dealt with by Wednesday, and nothing on the feeds today. Maybe it'll pop up tomorrow or something.
But I think it's maybe if you read between the lines that there was a confirmation from Mr. Max Mosley that he will not stand, but him being, you know, who he is, he said he will push for Jean Todt. So the more things change, the more they remain the same.
And speaking of Max does bag Jean Todt and reaffirms that he plans to quit in October and not seek re-election to the presidency of the FIA. He's backing former Ferrari boss Chantot to replace him. From a personal point of view, it would be very difficult for me to change my mind and stand again, Max said, and which is really funny because wasn't it less than 2 weeks ago they said, I can't leave now with everything in disarray. You know, it's like the whole thing comes back to, we'll believe it when we see it.
Yeah, it's the Max and Bernie show has become like two spoiled kids from Hampton High, you know?
Yeah, well, they've been where they've been at for so long with no opposition whatsoever that they kind of think themselves bulletproof. And it's very difficult to deal with individuals who are in that position because you go and look at what Bernie did to the teams. He basically, or not Bernie did to the team, but what Max did to the teams where he basically goes, well, okay, I'll step down. Let's roll everything back to 2009. And then they walk into a meeting and Charlie Whiting walks in and goes, oh, you guys can't vote. What? You know?
Yeah.
Well, it's like going back on his word constantly.
But I will say this, that Forta and Luca Montezemolo did rattle their cage, that's for sure.
Oh, best definitely got him, scared him. And I'm sure that Bernie had something to do with Max's turn, too. Because ultimately, if the teams walk away, Formula One is a paper tiger in that, you know, they're only the top of the line in name, no longer in substance.
Formula One is where Ferrari is. It's simple as that.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
And then the other bit of the other item involving the FIA presidency is that former World Rally Champion
Ari Vetinen
has basically thrown his hat in the ring, and looks like he's going to be running. He says he's already got a couple of the big clubs behind him. Most notably, I believe someone mentioned that he had the United States Automobile Association or. Automobile club behind him.
Well, he's also part of the member of the European Parliament. He may have been, but he was up until recently. So he's a very well-respected individual.
Martin Whitmarsh has come out in support of Vetinen, and he states, I think he is clearly a fresh and new. I think refreshing the sport would be quite good, said Whitmarsh, of the man who has spent the last 10 years working as a member of the European Parliament. He was a race driver and very successful and a world champion, so I think he understands competition, which is really nice.
You know, he's from Finland, and maybe he can bring in Kimi Raikkonen as the FIA spokesperson, and then we'll never hear anything.
Yeah, then we won't have any problems because, yeah, no, sir.
There is no communication.
No. It would be basically, yes, no. No. So that would be very interesting. I would actually prefer, I think, to see him rather than Chantot, just because I think he would bring a better breadth of experience. Chantot, I don't think, was ever a driver.
But he has a lot of – what he has going for him is a lot of experience. You know, he was head of Peugeot Motorsports, turned the Ferrari team around.
That does make sense. He's got a breadth of racing history because he was with their rally teams before he went to
– No, he was a rally co-driver also.
Oh, was he? Okay, so he so either of them probably would work out quite well.
But he has very strong ties to Ferrari, which would concern some people, and giving the history
but
of –
isn't FIA stand for Ferrari?
Internal agency.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what I was referring to.
So a lot of it just depends on – actually, I don't really care which one it is. As long as it's not Max. Next thing on my agenda is Ferrari's planning to ditch their 2009 car and move on to their 2010 design, which seems like kind of an odd thing to do considering they finally were actually competitive in Germany. Ferrari has revealed that it is ready to halt development of the 2009 car in order to place its full effort to its 2010 successor, which ironically, as they say, that... they finally got on the podium this season in Germany. Stefano Domenicali says, we've already started work on the new project. In the next couple of weeks, we will move on to that. We want to start with a different pace coming the next year. I think part of the reason that they may have been holding off, too, was they didn't know what the car was going to be next year because if Foto did break away, I imagine that car would have been significantly different than the 2009 FIA Sporting Regs car. So it should be interesting to see where they go, see if they continue to develop or if they just kind of stagnate at the point that they're at right now. And then the next thing, it was very interesting. Piquet's future is uncertain. Renault boss Flavio Briatore basically came out and said, I don't know if he will be. Maybe I'll be in the car.
Did you say Piquet's future?
Yeah,
does he have one?
Yeah, well,
yeah,
his future at Renault is in doubt. He probably has a future in general, but
IndyCar racing.
Really, IndyCar, they probably snapped him up in a hurry with the name wreck.
Yeah, and he will do well, I'm sure. But his dishes are done. But I feel very sorry for Porte. He is in the second year of the siege of Leningrad.
Yeah,
they are pounding
him. The interesting thing is, though, we've gotten to Wednesday, and there's been no official announcement. People were saying that Tuesday they were going to cut him loose, and they haven't. And then there were some interesting comments from Alguersuari saying that he didn't put in enough effort. And I'm like going, kid, how would you know?
Yes, exactly.
It's a comment that somebody of his age and his position should not be making.
Yeah, and, you know, he won the British F3, and I think he's a very good driver. But, you know, as you move up, the air is thinner and thinner. And, you know, he's in World Series by Renault.
And the cages get much more shaky.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And, but, you know, he's in World Series by Renault. It's not like he's walking away with victory in every race. That comment he made, you know, I'm a firm believer in free speech and to each his own, but I'll tell you, that may come back to haunt him. He just may find out how tough Formula One is.
Yeah, and basically, if he gets in the car and ends up not putting up good times,
yeah, because
versus Bruno or Stefan Buemi, Sebastian Buemi, he's going to look pretty silly.
Yeah, and the problem in Formula One is, you know, even if you do very well 1 year, then, you know, who knows, next year some new rookie might come in and rattle everybody's cage. And this happens.
You know, you never know when the next Sebastian Vettel's in the pipeline and on his way to being your teammate.
Yeah.
Piquet seemed rather confident that he was going to be in the car in Hungary because the team has assured him that he will have the speed updates that were on Fernando's car in Germany.
Well, you know, they say at Arthur Anderson, numbers don't lie, and they should know. But I read that Piquet's contract had a clause that, and again, I'm not sure if this is true, but I read somewhere today that he must score 40% of the points that Alonso has scored halfway through the season. And I believe Alonso has like 13, 14, and Piquet has zilcho.
So basically, that's an opening clause for the team to cut him loose if he doesn't have those points. He's liable for the X.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, clauses are good, but, you know, if the team wants to blow you out, they can blow you out and you can...
Yeah, it comes down to really all the contract does is guarantee that you're going to get paid.
Exactly. And in some cases, even
that's
if
kind
that
of
doesn't work out
personable.
Because they find other clauses too.
There's another fine print.
Yeah.
You didn't look at Addendum 3 on page 56.
Yeah, and also, you know, regarding Borde, I read somewhere that he, again, this is what I'm reading, not sure if it's true on the web, that he is suing Toro Rosso for, he's on the Andre Agassi program now. He's suing for image damage.
Yeah, they have him kind of talking him down when it really wasn't necessary. I think almost as to give themselves an illegitimate excuse for cutting him loose.
Well, you know, it's like this. A race or two is not going to make or break your career. But if you go one full season, regardless of what your name or nationality is, and you have not out-qualified your teammate 70% of the time, then you are really a sitting dog.
Yeah.
And when you go into a hostile environment, Piranha Club Formula One, just by its nature, is like that. And when you're going into a situation where you're not bringing $20 million or it's just you barely got the drive because, you know, a lot of people
you just happen to be the right guy at the right place at the right moment.
Yeah, so you're asking for it.
Yeah.
See, that's what surprises me about, you know, people like Borde or Speed or whoever. They should know when they're getting into these situations. It's like,
I think they just kind of...
They don't have a choice.
Yeah, they're kind of in a position where they're kind of stuck. You know, for Sebastian Bourdais, I think it was more about, you know, a kind of burned out champ car and looking ahead. There may not be a ride there in a year when he left. And he'd always wanted an opportunity in Formula One. He got it and he's used it and hasn't been able to capitalize. Always got to wonder what he would be if he were in a better package and maybe with a slightly better team overall, because I think One thing Toro Rosso tends to seem to me is they almost have a B-team mentality sometimes. They were kind of losing that last year when they had Sebastian Vettel. They had a driver that could get them over the hump. But now that they brought in Buemi and it's Bourdais, they seem to have gone back to that B-team. So it's kind of like the drama is more important than getting a good car on track.
Yeah, because, you know, let's say Romain Grosjean gets into Renault, for example, for the rest of the season. First two races, they'll cut him slack. You know, first race, second race, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, if he's going to be like Nelsinho Piquet throughout the season, and now he's got another problem, which is Nico Hülkenberg. The rookie has taken lead in the championship, and it's really, really good for Grosjean to get this seat and get out of GP2, because if you get beaten in GP2 in your second year by a rookie, that's Flavio's not going to be
it's
happy.
It's not good.
Yeah.
It's like Flavio starts looking for a DTM seat for you. And then my final point for this today's podcast is Jensen says that we're going to kick some booty when we get to Hungary. Last two races, the Braun has had a lot of trouble with tires. They have not been able to get heat into the tires, especially the harder compounds, and that has really shown up in their lap times. Jens believes that they should be able to regain some of that. Hungary's expected to be quite warm compared to the last two races. And he talks about his trip in Germany. It was a really frustrating, difficult race. He had a bad start. You know, he went into turn one. He was worried and kind of scared because, you know, he hasn't been going into turn one with other people all season. So that was freaking him out. And then they had a hard time when the circuit got cooler with the tires getting harder, and you just couldn't put down good lap times because you couldn't get the car on the track. Do you think Braun is on the slippery slope to oblivion, or is this something they're going to be able to remedy pretty quick? I know that they've been exceptional when it's warm, but if we get a couple of cold races, they could be really up a creek.
Yeah, but, you know, everybody's talking about that it's the, you know, they have problem in the core temperatures, and Hungary should be warm. Traditionally, it is. But I think overall, maybe Red Bull now has the advantage. But, you know, good for Button that Mark Webber has not rolled over and played dead for Sebastian Vettel. And he has done, you know, reverse cage rattling. So they'll probably take points from each other. So
yeah, but it doesn't serve Button too well because they both scored 18 points in the last two races. And Button, I think they said he scored like 7.
Yeah, but, you know, they're not going to win every race. I mean, on paper they can, but, you know, Button's day will come. I'm sure there will be, you know.
Maybe Rubinho.
There will be at least another 2 or 3 races in the rain, so he will have some chances. I think the crucial thing is that he very rarely makes mistakes, Jensen Button. So if he has a kablamo, then it's another story, but he must bring the car home, whatever points he can get.
Yeah, the other monkey in this show could be teams like Ferrari, McLaren, and Renault, who showed some really good pace in Germany, though poor Lewis couldn't catch a break to save his life in Germany. But looking at qualifying in the final practice, he had an exceptionally fast car. I'm sure Heike will get that same upgrade, so you're going to have 2 McLarens up in the top 10 probably. Fernando Alonso, with the upgrades that Renault made, if he could have qualified better, probably could have been in the mix for that third podium slot. And then the Ferraris looked significantly better with Felipe Massa getting a podium, and I think Kimi finished 5th. That could really start mixing things up, which is always fun. But we shall see.
But again, on, you know, analyzing things on paper, hard to believe somebody could win 6 races in the first half and still lose the championship. You really have to have a complete meltdown.
Yeah,
which
and
I don't.
It's a lot harder to do now than it was, say, 3 or 4 years ago before the engine freeze, because now the cars are, as far as the engines and drivetrains go, are pretty much bulletproof.
Yeah.
You know, typically when somebody drops out, it's hydraulic failure or something. You know, it's a subsystem. It's not
the main
power plant.
That's the PC version of, you know, if something goes wrong with the engine, it's hydraulic. You know, that's what
I say that to the thing.
Have you ever heard of any other problem except for hydraulics?
Electrical system.
Blame it on Magneti Marelli.
Exactly. Or it's that damn PCU from McLaren.
Yeah.
So we'll take a quick break, and we'll be back with Motorsports Mondial.
Are you between the ages of 8 and 80 and want to experience the thrill of wheel-to-wheel racing for yourself? Do you want a hobby that you, your family, or group of friends can share? the Jim Russell Northern California Rotex Challenge Series, sponsored in part by Marin Karting, is the fast-growing Northern California series of the Rotex Max Challenge USA and can lead to an FIA-approved world championship. Rotex answers your dream of racing. With a reliable engine that's sealed, keeps carts on the same level playing field, your operating costs low, your fun level high, and your skill determining your success. Be your own number one driver as part of the Jim Russell Northern California Rotex Challenge Series. Race on to NorCalRotex.com to learn more and see MarinKarting.com for Rotex engines, parts, and accessories.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Steve Faub, your host. And now we spin the globe and go around the world with our motorsports guru and motorsports mondial. Over to you, Naz.
Thank you, sir. Greetings and racing regards from Bordeaux to Jaime. I hope there is no love lost there. In this edition, Weber makes his mark and wins one, while the Hulk wins two at the Nürburgring. And there are two Felipes on the podium in Germany, and we shall explain. We shall start with reverse cage rattling and a case of advanced Australia fair and square. After being in the shadows of new teammate, the wunderkind from Heppenheim in Germany, love child of Dietrich Mateschitz, Dr. Helmut Marko, and most importantly, the slasher Franz Tost, race car driver from New South Wales and Land Down Under, Mr. Mark Webber, finally takes his first Grand Prix win in the German Grand Prix in his 130th Formula One start. Vettel had to settle for second with Felipe Baby, whose wife is expecting a baby in November, was third. This was a historical win as Webber now leads the table of drivers who took more than 100 races before scoring their maiden win. Others in this elite group include man who was galloping furiously after the race was over, the two-legged Rubinho, who took 124 races before winning his first, also in Germany back in 2000, and Danke to a disgruntled Mercedes employee who started walking on the trackside during the race, resulting in a full course caution. Were you watching Formula One when this thing happened?
No, that would have been just before my time.
Yeah, this guy apparently used to work for Mercedes and he was fired and he had some issues with his 401k plan or retirement plan. So he starts walking. Mika Hakkinen was leading the race at that time. He started walking on the side of the track in opposite direction with some, like, you know, signs on his back in front of his shirt. And like a friend of mine made a comment at that time, you know, they had to had a full course caution, and then in the melee, Rubinho takes the lead. So my friend said, well, at least the guy did the damage. Mercedes engine did not win. So that was quite a thing. Yarno truly was in his 117th race when he scored his first and so far only win. Monaco 2004, thanks to tunnel vision issues between Shuey and Monty. You were watching it on this time, I would imagine.
I don't think I saw that. I may have taped that one, but I don't recall the race.
Oh, this was another classic. We're watching. It's under a yellow, okay, of all the things. And the camera is now panning on the, you know, cars coming out of the tunnel. And here comes Michael Schumacher with serious damage to his car. He was, I don't know, he was warming up his tires, and Monty ran into him, of all the people. Typical.
Monty seemed to have that problem on occasion.
Yeah, Monty and Paul Tracy, I think they were
separated at birth.
Yeah, exactly. A continent apart.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, back to Webber and his dominating weekend. Winning the race from pole position makes him third Aussie to win in Formula One. First was Sir Jack Brabham in Monaco 1959, and if you like history of motor racing, please check out what happened to him on the last corner of the last lap in Monte Carlo in 1970. This is available on YouTube. It's an amazing, amazing end to this race. Jonesy boy, Alan Jones, won his first Grand Prix in 1977 in Austria at the track he used to call Ostrich Ring, actual name, of course, being Österreich Ring. This was Shadow's only Grand Prix win, and this car, unless I'm very much mistaken, is currently owned by an F1 Weekly listener in Canada, Mr. Grant Beath. The heat is on at Braun. Button's championship lead is now 21 points over new second-place man Sebastian Vettel, while Webber is only 1.5 points behind his teammate. The championship is now wide open. Will it be a case of Red Bull drivers ganging up on Jensen to unbutton him from the championship? or will we have a case of Williams in 1986 or McLaren in 2007? We are in for a great second half of the season, especially with Ferrari and McLaren also showing some muscle.
Dr. Shane, darling, Dr. Shane, thank you for seeing me again.
We go to page 2 and GP2. Oh, before I forget, I know you're a Relling fan. I just heard that Discovery Channel will now carry WRC races in this country.
Ooh, I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, in late-breaking news in high definition.
That's sweet. Hopefully it's similar, the program's similar to the one that used to be on Speed, where they do a really great recap of the entire weekend in like an hour and a half program.
Yeah.
That was just really sweet. They had all the good highlights and interviews with the drivers and stuff. It was always fun to watch.
Yeah, the TV feed is always the same, how they put it together is another story, but it will be in high definition, and I love those cars. You know, I was more in... My motorsports interest started with rallying, not with Formula One. I'm still a big fan of rallying.
Yeah, I've always liked rally more just because it's kind of, it's more of the drive in the country.
Exactly.
You know, track racing, yeah, it has its moments, but, you know, rally is something I could see myself going out and doing.
Yeah. Okay, a Willy Weber client has a dominating weekend. Haven't we seen this before? As predicted last year, cage rattling was in full force in both the GP2 feature and sprint race. Rookie Nico Hülkenberg won the feature race from pole position and then came through from 8th in the sprint race to win in the rain. Flashback to A1GP race in Malaysia some years ago. That performance in the rain leads me to believe that this kid could be better than both Hamilton and Vettel in the wet. You have to say this.
That's saying something.
Yeah, and you know, he 2 years ago, he won his first F3 race at the F3 Masters. And it was in the rain where he won against Grosjean and all those people. Mm. And I'll tell you, some years ago when he was driving for A1 Team Germany car in Malaysia in the rain, and you know, in Malaysia when it rains buckets and balties.
Yeah, well, so, we know, because this year's Formula One race ended in Malaysia because of the rain.
Thank you. I'm watching this race and I kid you not. You know, the track has nice flowing curves and all that, modern track. And the impression I got, and I still have this image, and you can see this on the YouTube also, and I even mentioned this to him when I interviewed him last year. It was like it was raining for everybody else but one driver. The guy was so dominating.
Wow.
I mean, he was just running away. And this guy is very good. Okay, Hülkenberg now leads the championship from Romain Grosjean. The Hulk could very well win the championship as a rookie, like namesake Nico Rosberg and Lewis Hamilton before him. Rumors are that Rosberg will move to BMW and Hulk will take his place at Williams, where he is already a test driver. Roldan Rodriguez was second and Andreas Zuber third in the feature race. Interestingly, if you watch this race, Andreas Zuber is from Austria, but he races with the UAE, United Arab Emirates, right, license. So their flag goes up when he is on the podium. Good for him. In the sprint race, Alvaro Parent was second and Kamui Kobayashi third. Alvaro Parent is from Portugal and Kamui Kobayashi from Nihon. Third racing series in action at the Nürburgring was Formula BMW Europe. Brazilian rookie sensation Luiz Felipe Nasser took pole position for both races. In race one, he had to settle for second behind Danish driver Michael Christensen. Dutch rookie Robin Frings was third. Felipe Nasser settled the score in second race of the weekend by winning over Christensen. William Buehler, or Buller, apologies if I'm screwing up his name, from the UK was third. Now we go all the way to Australia. V8 at the Dunlop Townsville 400. Jamie Wincup was the winner in race one, followed by Will Davison in second and Garth Tender in third. Winner in race two was James Courtney. Wincup was second and Tender third. And you know, I have a friend in Australia. He is from Sydney. Many years ago when he was here, he was telling me about a young kid in karting who was doing extremely well, and keep an eye on him. And that was James Courtney.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so cream keeps rising to the top.
It's a small world in racing.
Oh, yeah. And now we go to Indy Racing League from the streets of Toronto. Did you watch this race?
I watched bits and pieces of it. I was watching when...
Say no more. Let me come to it. Dario Franchitti was the winner for Chip Ganassi, and Ganassi is recovering from eye surgery. His vision is not on target these days, and we wish him 20/20 vision soon.
Yeah.
Victory puts Dario back in the championship lead by 2 points over Scott Dixon. Penske driver Ryan Briscoe was second and fellow Aussie Will Power third. He is also driving but part-time for Roger.
He's got, this is the first of 5 races, I think they said.
Yeah,
Will.
He also raced at Indy 500. See, that this Will Power, this performance that he's putting in, this is what it takes to retain your seat.
Yeah,
you cannot get, I'm sorry, I know it's not fair to say this, you cannot get to the top level of any professional sports and then wait for 2 years and 2 seasons before you can, you know, you can start doing what they want you to do from day one.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Will ran some pretty good races when they were in, when he was driving in
Champ Cars.
In Champ Cars. So.
Well, he won the final. Yeah, he's very good. He won the final Champ Car race at Long Beach. So his name is etched in history forever.
Yes.
Okay, and what would be a street fight be without Paul Tracy, also known as Thrill from West Hill? Like the lyrics from a George Benson song, we try to talk it over, but words got in the way. Well, PT tried to make a pass, but wall got on in the way. The wall of Castro Neves voodoo. Later, both realized that's racing, and we move on.
It was a really good bit of driving, but Castro Neves come back and just clipped Tracy's tire, which yanked the steering wheel out of his hand, just drove him and Tracy into the wall.
Yeah, it was not intentional. It looked like that it was overly aggressive, but if you watch it a couple of times, and even both drivers, Tracy himself says, you know, hey, I mean, if you're on a street course, if you're going, even in a Monza or Imola, if you're going into a corner which is right and left, two guys racing, chances of contact is very high.
Yeah, and that corner that they had their pass in 3 or 4 laps later, there was another big schlamozzle with 3 cars in that corner that knocked a bunch of people out of the race.
Yeah.
The thing I found that was really interesting is that Castro Neves was able to get his car back to the pits. We got out of his car, the crowd started booing him because he'd taken their favorite out of the race.
Yeah, and but in a street course, if you're making a right and a left turn immediately, nothing but concrete wall, I mean, this is going to happen.
Yeah, there's no room for any any mistakes.
But, you know, there is always excitement when Paul Tracy, Juan Montoya, Robbie Gordon, you put these people on the track. Like a friend of mine used to say about some drivers, and Robbie Gordon, Willie T. Rives was in that group, and Paul Tracy, of course. And this is when all these guys were in IndyCars, or basically IndyCars. And he used to say, these are drivers, if there is no trouble, they will find some.
They'll make some.
Yeah, it's interesting. And my favorite Robbie Gordon move is when he lost that NASCAR race here at Sears Point. When I think it was, who was it, Kevin Harvick? Somebody was trying to pass him to get his lap back with 2 laps to go. And he had the race pretty much won. Instead of letting him go, what is he going to do against Robbie Gordon in a road course, you know? He fights with him, tooth and nail every corner, and while he's busy fighting, holding a guy who's a lap down, Tony Stewart sneaks by to win the race. Okay, where are we now? Indy Lights. Now, here's another kid, Chris. Almost call you Clark.
Ooh.
Mr. Fobb, the Right Honorable Mr. Fobb. Sebastian Saavedra, the second coming of Monty from Colombia, was the winner over Andretti Green racing teammate from Sausalito, California, J.R. Hildebrand. Local talent James Hinchcliffe was third. Stefan Wilson, brother of Justin Wilson, was fourth. You know, this kid, Sebastian Saavedra, I've been following his career since he was in Formula BMW. He raced here, went to Europe.
Yeah, I remember hearing the name a couple of times.
Yeah, he is very good. He's very quick, which is the first requirement to succeed in racing. But, you know, he really needs to. This guy, I think, this kid, if he plays his chips,
cards right,
if all the chips fall in right places, he could fall in with Chip Ganassi's team. I mean, the guy is very good, but he's got a little chip on his shoulder. He's got a little hot-tempered guy. In the last race, which was in Watkins Glen, he basically did a hip check on what's his name from Southern Gar. We interviewed him, Charlie Kimball. Totally uncalled for. I mean, there's the Castro Neves, Paul Tracy. These things happen
when they're fighting for position.
Yeah, on a wide track, you're going all the way to the right to hit a guy that's not very good.
No, that'll cost you your ride if you're not careful.
Yeah, exactly, and you don't want your reputation to precede you. And this kid is very good, so I would like to see him, you know, go places.
Not only that, but you don't want the stewards looking for stuff.
Yeah.
Which is what happens if you start doing stuff like that. They start looking for you to be doing things like that. And then if you have a racing incident, they go, what? You did that on purpose. Yeah.
You know, I'll tell you something, not to ride on Robbie Gordon here. Many years ago, this was when Robbie Gordon was in, because I'm a huge Robbie Gordon fan. When he was in Trans Am GTO, I was in Detroit for the IndyCar race, and I was talking to a gentleman, a racing driver, who at that time was very well established, very well known even now. And we were just talking about different drivers, young up-and-coming drivers, and Robbie Gordon's name came up, and he says, you know, he needs to grow up. and I said, you know, maybe it's driver's jealousy, because Robbie Gordon obviously had a lot more talent than the guy I was talking to. And I says, why do you say that? He made a comment, and he says, you know, he really needs to grow up, otherwise nobody would take him seriously. Mm-hmm. And that was his reputation basically was, it's, I had a team member once say to me, Robbie Gordon was with his team, and I asked him, how is Robbie doing? And he looked at me and says, Robbie wants things Robbie's way. And once you have that reputation, you know, it's not good, especially...
Most drivers want it their way, but there's got to be some give and take.
Yeah, well, there's a way of conveying that message, you know. Yeah. I mean, you don't tell Roger Penske, hey, I want you to do this for me. That's not going to fly.
I want a faster car.
I mean, if you look at drivers who have been with Penske in the last 10 years, look at the people, Gilles de Ferran, Castroneves, Sam Hornish, Ryan Briscoe now. And who else does he have now? Will Power. All these drivers are very good. And most of the drivers in IndyCars are very good. But they all have a common thread. They don't make waves.
Right.
You know, if something goes wrong...
They get out there, they race, and they keep it within the family.
Yeah, Rubinho-type tantrum is not going to fly at Penske Racing.
Well, it's going to end your five-race contract real quick.
Or they will invite you in November to come to San Diego and bring your attorney like they did with Tracy. Okay, other news, we talked about Max already. Casey Stoner, the ex-world champion from Australia, has been diagnosed with mild anemia, and doctors are hopeful he will be back to speed on and off the track in a matter of weeks. And all the best to Mr. Stoner from the F1 Weekly Familia.
Apparently, eat your iron. I was mildly anemic as a child. It's basically blood cell issues typically. A lot of times it goes back to what you're eating.
Really? NASCAR. Boys were in action in the Windy City. The young one, Joey Logano, prevailed over the wild one, Kyle Busch, in the nationwide race. Brian Vickers made it an all-Toyota podium by finishing third. The Big Show Sprint Cup, win number four of the season for young man from Batesville, Arkansas, Mr. Mark Martin. Jeff Gordon was second, and kid from Enumclaw, Washington, Casey Kane was third. Monty was 10th. I hope Monty makes it to the chase. He is currently 9th in the standings.
Keep it up, Monty.
Yeah, which is very, very good. But, you know, this is on a personal note, Mr. Fogg. You know, every time I hear of Arkansas, I am reminded of Conway Twitty. And at F1 Weekly, we do not make things up. Apparently, his name, Conway Twitty, was taken from two towns where he used to perform on weekends, early part of his career. Yeah. They are Conway, Arkansas, and Twitty, Texas. And me being a fact-check kind of guy, I did look at, when I first heard this, there is a town, border town in Arkansas with that name. And
so
of course,
Twitty. He raised in Texarkana?
Yeah, I believe so. Something like in that area. And if you look at the map of the southern belt of the good old US of A, you will see driving distances just under 500 miles on Highway 40. Thank you, Conway Twitty. Thank you, San Jose Tapia.
And thank you to our listeners. We'll be right back after these messages with the wrap-up.
Hi, I'm Clark Rogers, host of F1Weekly.com's podcast. Please visit our website, F1Weekly.com, your fresh new destination for all your Formula One needs. F1Weekly.com brings you a weekly podcast that covers the latest news, rumors, and insightful commentary related to the pinnacle of modern motorsports, Formula One. You can find us on iTunes and other popular podcast locations. F1Weekly.com. Thank you.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. I'm Steve Hall, your host. I'm joined by Nasser Hamid. And we got a couple of items to wrap up before we call it a night. The first is form updates for July 14th. Mark Webber's first victory was duly acknowledged, and celebrated in the forum. In the prediction competition, Qual accurately predicted the race winner, but it was R. Boulanger who took first place with 46 points. Overall, Starfleet 76 is still in the lead with 334.5 points, 1.5 more than the second place Lion Bray. Button and Webber are now tied in the lead of the F1 Weekly Drivers' Championship with Raikkonen, while Raikkonen is 1 point away from being dropped out. The voting is still open, so listeners are invited to log in and express their opinions on who was the best and worst driver in the German Grand Prix. Ye posted a detailed statistical and trivia analysis of the GP, including every single lap time of every driver in the race. This should help clarify the debate over Rubinho's complaint that team mistakes deprived him of victory. Thanks, Ye. I think I read that Ross Brawn said, dude, we were 11th fastest. There's no way we were going to win that race. The How I Love to Live in the Countryside thread has taken a surprising turn. It is now focusing on ugly buildings around the world. And as the new week was about to start, the whole forum held its breath in suspense over Bernie's vow to end the FIA photo conflict. Miguel caused some sensation by announcing that CVC Capital has decided to retire Bernie and hire Briatore. And I'd like to thank Miguel for those forum updates. And then there was another little thing that was on the forums that was brought to our attention by our lovely producer, David Tapia. A little poem written by Ye. And he says, I'm not denying that Rubinho's can be a whiny old git sometimes. So he wrote an ode to Rubens. Rubinho, Rubinho, it's time to go. You've had some good years, but you're too damn slow. The Braun was the best, well ahead of the rest, but Jen's been faster when put to the test. The bad years with Ferrari have sullied your mood, but now in the Braun, you just ain't that good. 11th best lap, that's pretty damn slow for someone who thought he could win the damn show. Rubinho, Rubinho, it's time to go. Others can see it, but you don't seem to know. Abusing the team when you lost the race, well, it's clear, quite clear to all, you just don't have the pace. Lucky for you that Ross Brawn is restrained, as Flav or Frank W. would have your ass canned. Acting the pitch won't do your cause well, of Jean-Todd Schumacher and Ferrari do tell. That books needs writing, we all want to hear how Todd and Schumacher for each other were queer. The young guns are coming, the Red Bulls are fast, you just couldn't do it, your last chance has passed. Rubinho, Rubinho, it's time, let it go, you never were Senna. Adios, amigo. And my mistake, Nasser corrects me that it was written by Balls Out in Southern California. Very talented bit. Ye had sent us something like that in the past. That's why I thought he'd sent it, and he'd been the one that forwarded it to us. Good job, Balls Out. And then, quick for the wrap, if you are interested in sponsorship, advertisement, or cross-promotion with the show, contact us, info@f1weekly.com. We want to thank the Jim Russell Rotax Challenge and Marin Karting for their support. Check them out on the web. And we'd like to thank everyone that makes this show possible. You, the listeners. Nasser Hamid, Clark Rogers, David Tapia, our webmaster Toby, and all of the drivers and teams in Formula One that actually give us something to talk about. Good night.
Adios, amigo, and Rubinho.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.